there's also like this quite common misconception that commerciality and kind of purpose and responsibility needs to clash. I think if you treat your purpose as, you know, an add-on to the business and something that you try to kind of crowbar in there, that might be true. But I think for us, it's kind of built into the whole business model. So I don't think it has to clash at all.
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. And a huge thanks to Siri from Demma for introducing us to this brilliant guest. Thank you so much, Siri. We really appreciate it. Now, in this episode, we are catching up with a super duper sustainable clothing brand who produced one collection of clothes in the last 10 years. And they're all about the longevity of the products with you can get spares, you can go in for repairs, free repairs, you can get alterations, you can sell your products back to them and they'll sell them on to other people. And they do all their manufacturing in Europe to keep that mileage low and keep it more. Everything, you know, you get it, all the stuff. But we're really talking in this episode, not so much about that, but more about the performance marketing and the growth of it. We'll be talking about what they did for their 10-year anniversary, the impact that had over the following 12 months, a lot of testing and optimization, spoiler alert. And we'll be talking about some of the current challenges of dealing with Andromeda and the big social platform shifts. Fascinating guest. He's got some great top tips, so make sure you listen to the end so you don't miss out on those. And now to introduce our special guest. Jonathan Ain is the Chief Commercial Officer at Ask It, a fashion brand that doesn't think of itself as a fashion brand, with the goal to liberate daily life from clutter and excess. Their men's and women's wear ranges are sold via their Centra website and stores in both Stockholm and London that also offer repairs and alterations. Founded in 2015, last year they did £15 million in sales. Hello, Jonathan.
Hi, Chloe.
Very cool to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being here. How did you end up in the world of e-commerce?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So I actually have my educational background in a bit more of a technical field. Did my master's in mathematical modeling. So a lot of numbers, still like numbers. But then I started off at the Boston Consulting Group working in management consulting. And by coincidence, I did my first project in fashion retail and found a group of people that I really like to work with. So during my roughly 5 years at BCG, I spent more than 90% working in fashion retail. And a lot of focus on e-commerce, digital marketing, and kind of top-line growth. At one point, I felt like I wanted to have a life outside of work. So
Sounds like the typical consulting story, doesn't it?
In the
big firms, yeah.
Exactly. So I started to look around, but I didn't really have a rush. I enjoyed working at BCG quite a lot. But then at one point, I got in contact with August, who is our CEO and one of the co-founders of Ask It. He studied together with a guy that I worked closely together with at BCG. So it was through him that the connection was made. And after a couple of coffees and some discussions, I ended up joining Ask It. And that's my kind of road to Ask It and into the world of e-commerce.
Very cool. And so you've been in e-commerce for a long time, but not on the brand side. And how has it been everything you wanted it to be now you've hit the brand side of things?
Yeah, I think it's maybe even more. I think Ask It is still, we're still a small company. We've been around for, as you said, 10 years. So there is stability, but it's still that. To me, I think it's the perfect size of stability, but still a lot of things to develop and do. So I really like kind of being able to have the oversight of the entire company and kind of understanding the entire business, kind of working with every team and the whole P&L, and not just as a consultant. I mean, I work with a lot larger businesses and kind of focused on a specific niche where I think, you know, kind of building a business is even more exciting, and you feel a larger sense of ownership as well.
I mentioned in the intro that Ask It, you don't consider yourselves a fashion brand, but yet you're clearly a fashion brand from my inadequate perspective. So what's that all about?
Yeah, I mean, so usually we call ourselves a clothing brand, but it, of course we operate within the fashion industry. But I mean, we're an independent and purpose-led Swedish brand, and we're based in Stockholm. So our business model is, I would call it, radically different compared to anything else in the fashion industry, where we, over the course of the last then 10, 11 years, have built only one single permanent collection of roughly 50 timeless garments. And then each of those garments are continuously refined over time. And I mean, we work, you know, exclusively with natural fibers. We manufacture in Europe under what we call full transparency, and then try really hard to create garments that are designed to last, you know, both physically last, but also, you know, aesthetically and emotionally, something that you enjoy putting on and wear for years and years, kind of.
I mean, Ask It really is a case study in the fact that new, we need new stuff. We need new stuff now. More new is not necessary to build a successful retail business.
No. I mean, we feel like, you know, the fashion industry, the way it operates today, it's actually, you know, it's kind of broken. You know, a garment, the lifespan of a garment today is roughly half of what it was 20 years ago. And the industry's answer is kind of, you know, to just churn out more styles with a deteriorating quality at an accelerating pace. And yeah, we just want to operate the completely other way around, trying to, yeah, do then fewer garments of high quality that last, and that enables people to build a smaller but better wardrobe. Yeah, that's kind of it.
And you are the most senior person responsible for growth in the business. Growth is right there in your job title. But at the same time, the ethos of the company is kind of to help people buy less.
Yes.
So how do you balance those things? Is it all about kind of like finding new customers to re-educate, or is it about helping the existing customer base? How do you challenge, how do you deal with those two, on the face of it, completely opposite things?
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, first of all, as a business, I mean, we have business goals and targets just like any regular business. But I think what's different is that we also have a quite clear set of boundaries in terms of like how we reach those goals and targets, what we do and what we don't do to kind of reach those. And I think everyone in the company kind of knows those boundaries and operates within them. But then I think there's also like this quite common misconception that commerciality and kind of purpose and responsibility needs to clash. I think if you treat your purpose as, you know, an add-on to the business and something that you try to kind of crowbar in there, that might be true. But I think for us, it's kind of built into the whole business model. So I don't think it has to clash at all, because, I mean, we're trying, the kind of change that we want to drive in the industry is for people to consume fewer garments that last longer. But what we also try to do as a business is to create garments that last a long time. So essentially, like, if we are successful and we grow and we sell more of our garments, it should mean that, like, if you look at the industry as a whole, there's less garments sold and those garments last a longer time. So I think there's definitely like boundaries in terms of like we don't apply certain tactics on our sales that just makes people behave irrationally and buy things that they don't need and maybe even don't want. But I don't think there's like an actual clash between our commercial success and our vision or purpose.
Thanks for explaining that so brilliantly and so clearly. And I think it would be so weird to see like a 3-for-2 offer from you guys.
It's not going to happen. That
would be very strange.
Yeah. But
you're also embracing the circularity and doing quite a lot to help customers maintain the garments or even to sell them back to you as well. So, I mean, that feels like a really obvious part of the purpose. Is it something that's also helping with the bottom line?
Yeah, I would say it does to some extent, but I think it serves kind of two purposes. I think one is just from a business and a purpose perspective, it's very important for us that we actually design garments with a lot of intent. So already like in the design, we think a lot about, material selection for also like end of life, being able to take care of the garments like once they are, they can't be worn anymore, even if you sell them to someone else. But then also like through like the whole education phase in terms of like how can you take care of your garments to make them last longer. But then at one point, I mean, whether it's because you got tired of the shirt or because you switched size or, something else, you might want to get rid of it. But a lot of times it's still functional. And then we want to offer, a road where we can take them back. We offer a small voucher in our stores, but we also don't want to offer it like offer too much, like too much of an incentive, because we don't want people to use it as a way to just, buy new. So it's a bit of a balancing act. So of course it helps a little bit on the bottom line, but I think the main driver is kind of the purpose and also as a loyalty feature, because a lot of people, they kind of discover it after they purchase the first Ascot garment. But we can see that it's getting traction, and especially in our physical stores, a lot of people come in, they hand in their worn garments, but they also use our repair services quite heavily.
Awesome. And we mentioned briefly earlier that you've been around for 10 years. And the 10-year anniversary was last year. Now, most brands do a little bit for their 10-year anniversary. You guys went a bit big.
Yeah. And I mean, it wasn't really even intentional from the beginning. It just kind of happened to a lot of projects and a lot of milestones kind of happened to line up around the 10-year anniversary. So I think if we go, 2-3 years back, we were struggling a little bit with that we felt that there was a gap between our product quality. If we look at, what materials do we use? Where do we manufacture? What other brands manufacturing those same facilities? And then, what's the customer's perception of the brand and who do we get compared to? And where do they, manufacture and what do they use in terms of materials? We felt like the product is better than the brand kind of perception is. So we felt like we needed to work on closing that gap. So over the course of, I think, almost 2 years, we worked on an updated brand platform, an updated visual identity, and just trying to say, kind of reach the bar that we wanted to set for the product, also in terms of brand. And then at the same time, we worked on our new London store. So there were a lot of things kind of happening at the exact same time. And then it all just came together and ended up launching around April and May last year. So which was also our 10-year anniversary, which was, stars aligned and the projects kind of launched on time as well. So that was a really big moment for us for sure.
So new branding, new website or refreshed website, new first overseas store in a not inexpensive place to be launching a store, good old London, and the 10-year anniversary all coming together in one mix. It must have been mad.
it was quite hectic. And it was like, I think all of those things went live within 3 weeks, roughly. So that was an intense period. And then after that, you feel like, ooh, now it's all launched. Now we can relax a little bit. But then that's all usually kind of a misconception, misjudgment, where once you launch, that's kind of where the real work begins. You know, new website, there's always a lot of problems with completely new performance marketing campaigns, new tracking, new everything. So there's been a lot of fixing throughout the last year or so. And also, I mean, with a new London store, I mean, London is it's our second biggest city. So we already had like a significant customer base in London. But I mean, London is such a huge and global city. So like to break through the noise just a little bit, you need to really work on it actively. And then also for just our existing customer base to kind of land in our new look and feel and understand, you know, we're not like, it was a huge update for us, but we're not a very different brand in terms of our values and what we stand for and what we're trying to do, but just trying to kind of land in the new visuals and so on. So yeah, it's been a hectic year and a lot of fixing. But as I mentioned to you before, it's been very rewarding, and especially the last few months, it's been rewarding because we've started to see things land. And yeah, for the first time in a bit, we've seen really good also commercial traction and the numbers moving in the right direction, which is super nice to see.
It's kind of from, you mentioned, you know, that you've always been about the numbers, and what that always thinks to me when you're talking about growth, it's performance marketing, it's A/B split testing, it's tweaking the ROAS and the cost per acquisition and all these good things to see how you can really, really get the right results going and optimize. And we always talk, we're talking about optimization and testing. Just change one thing, and see what happens. So like it's launching all of that at the same time, new branding, new website, as you mentioned, all the tracking and all the rest of it, plus a new store to promote. It's almost like the opposite of what you'd ideally want in a performance marketing space. It's like, oh, right. So essentially nothing from before is really that relevant anymore. And we're going from zero again. Has it been, it's a frustrating situation sometimes, but I guess it's also been really liberating and really exciting to be able to kind of build all those growth systems from somewhere near a zero up again.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a dream in terms of just having a clean slate in one way, building everything from scratch. And we've also had, you know, periods where we've been a bit more liberal in terms of what we dare to test, because we are a company that are very protective of our brand for good reasons. But yeah, a bit more able to test a bit more freely. But then I've also been, I told my e-com and performance marketing team the other week that I feel like I'm very proud of the way that we've worked with our website and our performance marketing channels throughout the last year. Because to be honest, if you look back, you know, in July, August last year, the numbers didn't look great, especially in performance marketing. But, and we didn't really know, you know, is it the tracking problem? Is it the creatives? Is it the campaign structure? Where's the problem? But we've been very good at, you know, even though we changed way too many things at once, then we, after that, we've been very good at kind of turning one stone at a time, really doubling down, seeing, you know, is there a problem here? What could be the problem? If we put our effort and time into this one for a limited amount of time, can we move the needle? And then, okay, now we've done everything we can here, moving on to the next one and working very kind of disciplined and systematically to kind of turn things around. Because, I mean, we knew that launching everything from scratch would, you know, it would be tough, but I think the impact was potentially even higher than we expected. So yeah, it's really required a lot of discipline and hard work from the team over the past year or so. But it's very rewarding both for me and for the team now when we start to see things pay off.
Oh, completely. And I guess, and this hasn't occurred to me before, but I guess one of the ramifications of the ad platforms now being more algorithm makes all the decisions and the humans don't make the decisions is big changes like that throw the algorithm off.
Yeah, completely.
So it, you could still have the best creative in the world and the best tracking setup in the world, but what you were feeding them before is now completely different to what you're feeding them now, and they get confused and it takes them a while to catch up.
Yeah, it's like starting over. And I think that catch-up phase was longer than we expected. And also since we kind of switched the whole visual identity and so on, I think it kind of threw them off because things looked and sounded quite differently. I think one thing that I have, I don't have like proof of it in the numbers, but one thing that I've learned over the last couple of years kind of working with performance marketing is that sometimes you end up in like a positive spiral. It feels like, you know, the algorithm and the platform likes you. You don't really know why, but it seems to work. And that leads to, you know, decrease in CPM, higher visibility, and then the performance goes up even more. And then after that, the platform likes you even more. It gives you more visibility, lower CPM. And so it's like a reinforcement in terms of a positive spiral. What we saw, you know, a year ago was the opposite, that, you know, it becomes a negative spiral where it doesn't like you. You pay more for the same kind of views, and then you don't have the budget to buy as many views. So the performance kind of plummets, and then you kind of just go down and down. And it took a while to kind of turn that around. And I feel like now we're finally back in that positive upward spiral again, where the platform kind of starts to like you more and more for every week.
I love that. And I think it's a good lesson to all of us that even when a rebrand is the right thing to do and you made all the right decisions, it can take a while for the benefits to pay off. You've got to not anticipate day two.
No. You know? No, you definitely need to, like when you do big changes, you need time to get them to land. And I think for us, of course, that's also a little bit of a challenge because we're an independent brand. So, I mean, we're unfunded. We're trying to fund our own journey. So it's always this balancing act between, you know, making the decisions that we think are the right ones long term. But then we also, of course, need to have financial viability short term. So it's a little bit of a balancing. And here we kind of did a lot of long term things at once. But we're very excited and we feel like we have a great foundation in place to kind of build from.
And talking about building from that great foundation, what's got you excited for the next 6-12 months?
Yeah, so I think for the next kind of 6-12 months, we've been doubling down quite a lot in paid social lately because so with a little bit of background, I mean, given that we're a direct-to-consumer brand, so you can only buy Askit, you know, in our own sales channels, and we also don't have any logos on any of our products, that means that brand discovery is maybe, you know, our number one thing to solve. So and then we're trying to find, you know, these different recipes in terms of like how can we drive brand discovery also when the majority of the business and our growth comes from like not our home market. So, I mean, how can we make people in the US, in the UK, in Germany kind of discover Askit? Because we can see that once people have kind of discovered the brand, understood the brand, made their first purchase, then they are quite hooked. We have good kind of loyalty and retention metrics, but like, how do we make people discover it? And we need then marketing channels and marketing activities that both work, but are also kind of scalable. And we think it's quite exciting now with the whole, you know, Meta Andromeda update that was made like roughly a year ago. We're trying to really understand how that algorithm works and work with our creative and brand team, both increase the volume of creatives that we work with, but also much more differentiated in terms of the different types of creatives and the different narratives that we work with, because we are a brand that have a lot of things to say. So we're trying to find like a ways to really use paid social as a way to drive brand discovery in an active way, because we've always been a brand that is quite strong organically through kind of word of mouth, PR, internet forums and so on. And that's great because it's cost efficient and so on. But we also need certain levers that we can use to drive growth more actively.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are. It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. Jonathan, are you ready for the top tips?
Yes.
Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
Yeah, so this was the question that I had some anxiety about because I had to admit that I haven't been very good at reading lately. It might be a combination of, you know, having small children and quite intense work period. So I'm going a bit outside. It will be a podcast tip and potentially a bit mainstream. But I would recommend anyone to listen to the Acquired podcast. I feel like as a business focusing on building something long-term and lasting, I think there are plenty of learnings that can be made on kind of how to build a strong company and especially a strong brand from those giants that have kind of endured over time.
Oh, I like that. We do like a podcast recommendation and we'll definitely take that as an alternative to a book. So definitely acceptable. Thank you, Jonathan. Traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
Here I have to say SEO or AEO. I mean, everyone knows about it, but I feel like it gets just too little attention and too little investment. And I feel like investing in SEO, it's like a gift that just keeps on giving. And I think right now is also a great opportunity because with the kind of technical shift that's happening now, it opens up a lot of new possibilities in terms of working actively with SEO and AEO. Because previously, I feel like, you know, team capacity has been a big kind of bottleneck. But there's a lot of things that can kind of be removed now in terms of that type of bottleneck with working with SEO and AEO. So yeah, that's more focus on SEO. It will pay back long term.
Oh, completely. It's kind of mad how AI in 3 years has gone from killing SEO to making it one of the most exciting marketing channels our industry.
Sure.
Okay, the tool top tip. Maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
Yeah, so this is kind of building on what you said in the last part of the last question. Might also be a bit obvious right now, but I just have to say Claude. I mean, for me, it frees up so much time, you know, everything from building automation skills for recurring tasks to kind of running complex analysis to workflows. And I think for us, as a small business with a highly operational management team, I think we always kind of struggled a little bit with finding the balance between being operationally involved where we can contribute and then also kind of having time to lift the gaze and look ahead. But now I see like using AI really, really frees up time to have enough time for both of those horizons.
I love that. Always good to hear someone who's found super practical ways to make AI work for them in the business, because I think there's still a surprisingly large number fumbling. So
I think there is definitely a hurdle to get over, but once you get over it, and I think, you know, starting with a clear use case, that's the key, not going too much on a broad discovery hunt, then it's a rabbit hole in terms of time.
Oh, completely. The carbon top tip. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
So this is a kind of obvious one also for us and for Askit. I would say, you know, create products that last. Slowing down consumption or trying to avoid, you know, mindless consumption in different ways, I think that is for sure the best thing that we can do.
Oh, I completely agree with you. Jonathan, before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and Askit on the web and social media?
Yeah, so please go in and visit askit.com. We'll love to have you there.
Awesome. Jonathan, it's been really cool getting to chat to you about the business and about how you've been approaching all the interesting things you've been doing in the last couple of years. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was really great.
Well, who would have thought that a conversation with someone from a brand so focused on longevity of their products and doing the right thing for the planet would be a big old chat about performance marketing in its various forms and shapes. But really great to get to chat to Jonathan there from Askit and find out lots of insights on how they're kind of approaching their growth, but also how they kind of did so much in one go for that 10-year anniversary. You can get your hands on the notes from this episode, including the top tips and links to what we've mentioned, by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. You can also use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/the episode into the URL bar, and you'll be redirected straight to the right episode page. When you get to the website, you can also add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of the other things I share to help you improve your business. If you like this episode, then why not check out recent episode 597, which is all about circular fashion with Simon Payne from Soul Responsibility, which goes a lot deeper into the circularity and sustainability issues than we managed in this episode. So that's 597. And if you want more on fashion, then ecmp.info/fashion will take you straight to all our fashion episodes. Thank you for tuning in to this and every episode that you do of the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help e-commerce business owners to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including encouraging businesses and consumers to make more sustainable buying decisions. So, if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I hope you have a great week and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.